You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until...
The Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is
I Will Make You a Millionaire, another episode helping someone reach their goal of making millions. So, Jen, you mentioned that things have been a little stressful. So the first question is, how do you deal with stress? I know how I deal with stress, and sometimes it's not so good, sometimes it's good.
Yeah, I'd say why I feel so stressed, and this is something I love, but it brings me stress, is that I'm always doing 1,000 things. Yeah. So I have a to-do list every week that just never seems to end. It just gets longer and longer and longer. So I think that when I feel super stressed by it, I have to step away. I have to give up. I have to say, okay, today I can't do any more, and then try to start again tomorrow. But I do think, you know, I'm the kind of person who likes that chaos, who likes that stress. But yeah, I think I've been handling it pretty well. I do think some of the things making me stressed out lately were also making me feel scared.
Let me just add that part of being on your own, meaning like not working for a regular standard 9-to-5 corporate job and trying to achieve wealth, part of that means is that you're taking on more than you can handle. That, like, almost by definition, you have to take on more than you can handle. Everyone else takes on what they can handle, which is why it's not as likely that they're going to create incredible wealth.
Yeah.
But when you take on more than you can handle, A, bad things can happen. You could lose what you have. B, you could get stressed. It could be, you know, C, sometimes things are going to fail, and depending on how you, the mindset you have for dealing with those failures, whether they're big or small, is important. And this is not like I'm saying this more to myself. Like, I'm always, Jay knows, I'm always taking on more than I can handle, even now. And I think to myself, why do I do this to myself? Like, it's just sometimes it's just I feel like an idiot, and I get stressed, and then I have to figure out how to cope with stress. And then there's kind of like the obvious stuff, like, you know, taking walks, you know, being grateful, eating well, sleeping well. Those four things are incredibly important. Like, sleeping well, I just read, if you sleep less than, like, let's say 6 hours a day, or if you sleep around like 5-6 hours a day for 3 or 4 days in a row, you start exhibiting signs of dementia. And you know, and you get irritable and all that kind of stuff. Eating well is obvious. Like, if all I eat is junk food, then I'm just like Jay, I just start screaming at Jay and hitting him when he's around, and it's not very pleasant. And grateful is because it just sort of reminds you that it's not all about all these little, you know, shitty things we have going on, that there's a reason why we're doing this.
Yeah.
Like, there's a why to it. And I forgot the other thing. Oh, taking walks. It's just good to get out and, you know, see the universe and take a walk with your loved one or whatever. But it's interesting. I was talking to Andrew Huberman, who's a neuroscientist at Stanford. And he was telling me about dopamine and serotonin. And so dopamine's that kind of neurochemical that gets you moving in the morning, gets you excited about what you have to do. And serotonin is the neurochemical that makes you feel satisfied with what you have accomplished so that you could sleep at night. And so for dopamine, he suggested basically go for a walk in the morning. Make sure your eyelids have dopamine receptors on them. So he suggested go for a walk in the morning and try to look at the horizon. And so there's something about looking at the horizon that triggers dopamine. And again, like eating nutritiously, exercising in the morning, all these things, gratitude, all these things he felt were very helpful to get to kind of overcome that stress in the morning of like, oh my gosh, I have so much to do. And serotonin, he said, just get rid of the screen in the evening. Like, don't look at the screen a couple hours before you go to sleep. Don't eat for a couple hours before you go to sleep. You know, try to do some activity you enjoy other than work. And all these things don't take much time, but greatly reduce stress. But I'll admit, sometimes stress for me, I feel like I was traveling the past week and a half, and it was nonstop. Like, I never had like a minute off. And Jay was calling me constantly with new podcast guests. And I was like, Jay, stop it already. And he quit, and that stressed me out. But then he came back. And so,
thank God. We need him.
Yeah. We need this.
It's very easy to get me back, you know. Just feed me some rice, I'm back.
Jay is the force behind this podcast. He turns the switch that gets me open in the morning and so I could do this.
He's your dopamine. He's your personal dopamine.
He's like I command him to give me his dopamine every morning. So he's depleted of dopamine, but I get a stem cells from Jay.
Yeah, to get every my morning there's like a tube going to my hand, you know, just like all the dopamine.
It's like an IV from his brain to my brain.
I believe it. I think, you know, one of the things making me so stressed right now that I think a lot of people listening might feel as well is the end of the year. You know, as an entrepreneur, when you're responsible for every dollar of your income, I'm a solopreneur, so literally every dollar of my income, the thought of having to start over a brand new year is not only stressful, but overwhelming. You know, I hit my money goal for this year, but I'm wondering, how am I going to do it again? Every single year, it's how am I going to do it again?
Well, okay, that's a really great point. And you hit it this year. Did you hit it last year?
I did not hit it last year, no. And, you know, I think my goal is also shockingly low. A friend the other day was saying what she thinks people my age should be making, and I'm not making anywhere near that.
Well, part of it also is that now you're doing all these new things to start. We're trying to light a fire under new things so that we exceed your goal by many, many multiples. And sometimes that takes time. Like initially we thought, okay, 12 months, maybe it'll take 12 months, but maybe, you know, give or take. I didn't hit my goal for this year. I always have a goal. I didn't hit mine, but you just have faith that if you kind of plant the garden, it'll grow at some point.
Yeah.
So you just have to. That's the whole 1% a day thing. Like if you just keep tending to the garden, then it will grow. It's just, you know, sometimes it takes longer than other times. But yeah, that end of the year stress is hard. Like I think to myself, oh my gosh, I got to get all this stuff done by the end of the year. And so I have projects launching tomorrow and December 1st. And I have all sorts of stuff for end of the year going on that is stressful. But yeah, it's just part of the rhythm of this.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, this is the time of year where I'm like, wow, I'm so proud of everything I did, but how are you going to pull it off again for year 6, Jen?
But you can't think about next year because you just have to have faith in yourself. You know you could do it.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you do it next year?
Yeah.
I mean, what would stop? Let's think about it. What would stop it from happening next year?
You know, it's like, when I try to meet these goals every single month of how much I want to make, I slide by them by like the thinnest margin, right? And it's like doing the most creative, odd things. It's like, okay, now I have to redo that next year. And it's always, you know, it's like I'm sort of gambling. I'm risking it. Nothing's guaranteed. But I think to myself, what's the alternative? I can't get a full-time job. I don't think I couldn't survive. I'd be fired on day one.
55 million people were laid off in 2020 because of the pandemic. So those aren't really secure.
Right,
situations.
Exactly.
So what you're doing is the most secure of all. But okay, let me ask you this. What did grow every month? Like what was a positive thing that grew every month?
Bridesmaid for Hire, my business, made more money this year than it has in a very long time. So that grew significantly month after month.
Is that because more people were having on-site weddings than ever before, but they were lacking basically personnel to help them?
It was that, but it was also other services. So the maid of honor speech writing I do, because it's ranked first on Google, I get probably 6 to 10 a month. My course, my passive income course I have for Bridesmaid for Hire, I get a ton every month. So it's like, and also advertising in the newsletter, thanks to you, that's money coming in. So that is something that for the first time in a very long time has been super successful that I think I can maintain and grow even more next year. So, you know, like over the past couple of years, I've been making money from external things, from consulting and things like that. But this year is the first year where I made pretty much equal of my own income from Jen Glantz, from Bridesmaid for Hire, and outside things like consulting and speaking and doing things for other people.
Yeah, like it's so great when your core thing that you've been doing forever kind of rises up and kind of makes your income, you know, the level you need for income. And then these other things you do, when they start bringing money in, it's like gravy, but then you could kind of, you know, double down on the things that are working. And that's how eventually, you know, you start generating real wealth.
Yeah.
So it might be the case that Bridesmaid for Hire is good for income, but it's not going to create, you know, millions, but it gives you the money and the freedom to pursue these other things that could make that amount.
Yeah. You know, yes, I'm in Florida right now visiting my family, and we were driving up famous Palm Beach area, looking at all of the mansions, the $60 million mansions. And I couldn't help but think to myself, what did these people do to make this much money, right? There's thousands of these mansions. What did they do to make this much money? And I don't know if that's an idea for somebody else's newsletter or podcast, or maybe featuring in Odd Jobs, but I am so fascinated how people went from making nothing to owning $60 million homes. And you can't find out that information at a very, you know, specific level. They'll just say, oh, I'm a CEO of a business. No, but what did you do with your money? How did you invest it? Where did you put it? Like, I'm so fascinated by this and hungry to know how rich people continue to build their wealth.
And you know what? I'm really fascinated by this as well. Like, so for instance, we were looking at a house, when we were looking around at houses, I wanted to find out how the guy who owned the house made his money. I kind of Googled him and looked him up. He basically made money by collecting everybody's trash and finding kind of the metal in the trash, you know, it's this odd pieces of metal. And then he would melt it down, and it's called slag at that point, and he would sell it. And it was just an ugly, gross business. But he's even quoted in this one article that you make the most money from ugly businesses. Mm. And so that was like a weird example where he probably made, you know, let's say 10 million. But like those houses in Palm Beach, a lot of that is inherited wealth and Tony Robbins, you know, people like that. So it just depends. I have one friend, he's a regular employee at a regular job. And something like 3 years ago or 4 years ago, a neighbor of his in his apartment building said, hey, do you want to put $10,000 in this one investment? And it was a crypto related investment. And my friend barely knew the guy, but he's like, okay, $10,000, I'll put it in. And that $10,000 stake is worth $23 million right now.
Wow.
Yeah. So sometimes I think with most people, you can't figure it out because there are situations like that. But
yeah.
But it just goes to show you though, there's, you know, right now between Trump's bailouts and Biden's bailout, there's been an extra $10 trillion just showering the economy. And just to put that in perspective, I think there's something like $40 trillion of currency on the planet. So just in the past year, an extra 10 trillion, like, you know, a third of that, it was 30 trillion, now it's 40 trillion. So
wow.
A third more money was added to the world. And it's got to go somewhere.
Yep.
So, and it's not going to go to the people who are going to a 9-to-5 job. It's going to go to the people who have their hands out and are looking for that money. Right now is a great time to be a solopreneur and to try as many things as possible. I almost feel stressed. I'm not doing enough. But then as it is, I'm overloaded with all the things I'm doing. So I get stressed on that. So you get stressed no matter what.
Yeah, no, I get it. I think like, and that's one of the things I had on my list. I'm like, I want to make more money in 2022 because I think I can, and there's so many little things I think I'm doing wrong that hold me back from making that money. And a lot of that's organization or just streamlining things or just getting things going, you know? And I think that's a huge goal of 2022 is to make more money. You know, my friend said how much he thinks a person my age should be making, and I wasn't even making anything close to that. I thought—
What did your friend say?
She thought, and I'm 33, she thought somebody my age should be making 250 plus.
I mean, when I was 33, I don't even know if I was making that because this was during one of the times when I went totally broke.
Yeah.
No, 33. I made zero. I lost millions that year.
Wait, James, so, aren't you supposed to raise my salary right now?
I'm 30, we planned now. This.
No, yeah, yeah. We planned this. You know?
Wait, Jay, you're not 33 yet, right? I met you when you were 19 a few years ago.
It was 26.
Okay, so how old are you now? 31.
Me? No, I'm 33. I'm about the same age as Jen.
You're 33?
Yeah.
All right. Gonna have to raise your salary to 250. There you go.
Jay, I get 10% of that. You know that, right?
I don't think your friend's right because I was making like negative at that age. Like that's also the year, one of the years when you're taking the biggest risks.
Yeah.
Because think about it. In your 20s, you're taking risks, but they're not really risks because you don't have the responsibilities yet.
Yeah.
And in 40s and 50s, sometimes it's too hard to take risks. Although I dispute that. I'm in my 50s. I tend to take too many risks still. But 30s is like the prime time for risk taking. I would say that the 30s, you should be not making as much because you're trying lots of things that are risky.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully you organize your life in such a way that you could handle the volatility of that. I did not do that, but I survived somehow anyway. But yeah, so it's good though that A, it's good that Bridesmaid for Hire is doing well. B, you can't worry about next year. Next year will be next year. And by the way, I do that too. Particularly during rough periods, I'll say to myself, oh my gosh, I have 16 months left and then I'm dead broke. I have 6 months left and then I'm dead broke and on and on. And it's just a horrible way to think because you can't control that. You could just control your actions today, what you're going to do to solve things. But you can't worry about, well, what am I going to do 2 years from now when all this doesn't work out? You can't think about it.
Yeah.
But I'm telling myself that. It's not, it's just, I go through that all the time.
I think it's probably normal, right? You know, I have days where I'm like, oh my God, tomorrow I might make $0. Then I have days where I'm like, wow, things are going really well, you know? So I think it's tough. I think, you know, after this past month, I need to be stronger. I need to become more thick skinned. I need to be able to just, I think, roll with things a little bit better. I take everything so personally. So if something's going wrong or someone's coming after me or something's not working, I take it really personally. And that adds to the stress for sure.
Yeah. No, I do the same thing. I'm always wondering, like, why did this person do this? Why did this person do that? And it's good to analyze why do people act certain ways, but you can't take it personally. Although, again, I'm talking more to myself than anything. So let's go through your list. What do you want to start with? You really do have so many things going on. It's great.
I know.
I'm excited to hear about everything.
And then I have new things I wanted to ask you about. But okay, I guess we can start with the Newlywed Card Game because that's a positive. So I put that on Kickstarter and I got it 200% funded. So
whoa.
Yes.
Well, so what was your funding goal? I forget.
500.
Okay. You asked for too little, but that's fine.
But I made over 1,000 with it. And the cool part was it was, you know, a couple people who I know, but then a lot of people I didn't know, a lot of strangers. So that was really cool.
How many funders all together?
I think close to 30.
That's great.
Yeah, it was a good start. I did very minimal advertising of it. So after that closed, I built a new landing page temporarily for it. And I bought the domain name, the Newlywed Card Game. I ordered a sample deck. So I finished the questions. Last time we spoke, we were with Robin. We were going over questions. So now I ordered the deck as a sample to go through it. Once it's ready to be printed, my husband Adam is like an Amazon guru. He's going to put it up on Amazon. And another big update is an online store emailed me, and I've known them. They're pretty well known. They somehow found the Newlywed Card Game, and they asked me to send them a sample of it because they might want to sell it on their website.
That's excellent.
Now,
and you know, by the way, we had a podcast with a guy, Phil Stutz. He does a lot of surveys about how people are spending their time and so on. He found that overwhelmingly this year, more than any other year, women are using Pinterest through the roof, like more than any other social media. And I don't know if you use Pinterest, but that could be a place where you really go for it. And there's also links from Pinterest directly into, you know, shopping and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always heard Pinterest is amazing. But yeah, so I'm wondering A, do I pursue this online store? Because they do take a pretty big cut. And then,
well, do they want an exclusive with you?
No, they don't want. They don't want it. They didn't mention an exclusive.
Then, as long as you get the email addresses of all the customers,
okay,
do it, because later products you'll just do direct to,
yep,
your email list. So it's just people you wouldn't have otherwise gotten. As long as you don't lose money.
Yeah, and then I was going to think about pitching. There's all these like relationship marriage subscription boxes. So I was going to pitch them when I have the deck offering.
That's a huge idea.
But my question is, should I change the name? Because Newlywed Card Game is not trademarked. It's open. But Newlywed Game, obviously, is a show, a TV show. It's trademarked for TV only. Do I just change the name and make it something completely unique? Or do I stick with the Newlywed Card Game, which I like because it's so obvious what this is?
Yeah, well, you know what? I like the Newlywed Card Game, but let's just brainstorm for a second. What would you change it to? What was your first thought?
Something with marriage, like challenge your marriage.
I like challenge your marriage. The marriage challenge. Oh, I like the marriage challenge.
Yeah.
How about is your relationship fucked?
Or like unfuck your relationship.
Unfuck your relationship. The unfuck your relationship card game. Like people will at least notice that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, what was Mark Manson's book? The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was a bestseller. I'm sure not because of the title, but probably the title helped. Because, you know, not everybody who's going to be playing the game is married. It's all about relationships, too.
Right. Yeah.
The should you date this person card game? Mm. Or should you, you know, is my BF/GF a loser card game?
I like that.
So just kind of like really like, and then you could just picture people around the couch or whatever. Ah, you're a loser.
I like that. Yep.
And then 2 days later, you will hear like, oh, this couple's got divorced. That couple got divorced.
I could have a divorce lawyer sponsor the game, put their card in there.
Oh my God. That's a great idea. Just think of the sponsors you could have for this game. You could have each card as a sponsor.
I was thinking that.
That's a business model for this.
I
so
was
this way you don't have to
that,
charge
yeah.
as much.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is I hired a designer to do the deck and this person was like, hey, I'll give you a discount if you put my name on the deck. So you're right. Like it could be some sort of advertising and maybe the next version of it is advertising too.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. And, or you can get some like wedding magazine to sponsor it so that they're on every page. There's all sorts of things you could do. I like the design that I've seen, like that was on Kickstarter, the Newlywed Card Game. But now that I think about it, I bet you can have a more challenging kind of title.
Yeah.
Like a little edgier.
I'm going to brainstorm even more names.
Yeah. All right. So that's good. And then how in terms of making it, you know how to make it and everything?
Yep. I have a company who I designed the first deck of, and before I ordered all of them, I just printed a sample one to look at. So that's coming the first week of December. And then once it all looks good, I'm going to order my first 100. And I was going to price them at $18.99 just because that's sort of what I researched and found was like how much these games go for. I would profit about $9 to $10 on them. And then I'd also charge for shipping so I don't have to cover that cost.
Yeah, that's good. And you can, if you ever need like a little more margin, you can add to the shipping cost somehow.
Yeah. Yep.
And you could, let me ask you this, what's an upsell? So in other words, they're checking out of the shopping cart and they're buying one deck of the Newlywed Card Game. What's a thing you could put right at the so-called point of purchase that say, hey, if you bought this, you might also like this.
So far right now I have one where you get a second deck for 50% off just because I'm thinking people would want to gift one, but I could go back to what I offered on Kickstarter and do some of those, or I could even team up with somebody and have them pay me to offer their product or service as an upsell too.
Yeah. You know, the idea that you're going through the whole process of making this, everything from the Kickstarter to designing the cards, to making the cards and the questions, to setting it up on Amazon, like I would pay for that service. If I had an idea for a card game,
yeah.
I wouldn't want to reinvent the wheel. I would just hire your company to make my card game.
Well, is that a business like getting married? Why not gift your partner your own personalized card game? I mean, that's such a great wedding gift for couples.
I think it's a good wedding gift or a good anniversary gift. Or, but it's just even outside the scope of weddings. Like, what if I came up with a card game? What's the big card game about?
Cards Against Humanity?
Yeah, Cards Against Humanity. So there's all sorts of ideas. Like, I was thinking of a card game last year, Trump Against Humanity, or you could do Biden Against Humanity. Yeah. But, like, not that title, but, like, something like that. And so, and we were even, like, making the rules, and but then I just lost interest. But there's lots of ideas for card games out there that could be fun.
Yeah, I think being the service, because you can make a card game anywhere, but being the service that helps you make it, that writes the cards for you, that does all of that, could be a business idea that's worth pursuing.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. What else is going on with the card game? Like, when do you start making it?
So I'm planning to ship the first 30 that were bought by people in middle of December, and then having my first order, which I'll then put on Amazon, run ads for, actually promote, do PR around. So by the end of December, January, this is going to be up and running for sale.
Wow. So that's great. And you'll be on Amazon, everything?
Yeah. And I played the cards with Adam because I figured I should test it out before I make it. And his direct quote was that this was shockingly more fun than he thought it was going to be. And he's very honest. He wasn't just saying that. So he really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. He didn't think, you know, we went through all the questions and I don't think any are boring. I think all of them have a fun element to them or a serious element to them. So it's a good mix.
Oh yeah, that's good. What are some of the new questions?
I'm going to pull them up right now because we had a lot of ones and we had to cut a bunch. So let me pull up. If $1 million entered our world tomorrow, how do you think I would spend it?
How do you think I would spend it? That's good.
What's the weirdest thing about me? Which is a good question because some of the things Adam said, I was like, wow, you're right. No one else really knows that. And
then is there, I forget, are there penalties somehow if they get it wrong? Like, are you keeping score?
There's not, but I could add that to the next version. It's sort of like a scorecard with penalties.
Yeah, like maybe each card should have points.
Yeah.
And they either gain or lose those points. And then you could have a kind of a guide. Like if they score, let's say there's 100 total points. If they score less than 80 points, then you need to work on your relationship. If they score only 50 points, it's like you guys should try to rekindle the romance. And if they score less than 20 points, you have to get a divorce.
Here's
a number for a good divorce lawyer.
I like that. One of the challenges is blindfold the other person and ask them to draw you on a piece of paper.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's a great one. I like those action ones.
On a scale of 1 to 10, close your eyes. And on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you with our lives right now? Put your fingers up and then open your eyes. So I might say 2, you might say 10, and then you open your eyes and you see.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I like that. So and it's going to be available for sale January. I'm ordering a whole bunch and Jay's ordering a whole bunch.
Jay already gets a bunch. I'm sending them to all of you.
Okay, excellent. And then what's the next card game? Because like now, then you should have like, you know, there's all sorts of versions. You should have like the adult version. You should have the maybe people who just start dating or they haven't dated yet. Like it's the dating, the first date card game.
Oh,
like this
yeah,
is the card
cute.
Game you should play on your first date.
Yeah. Yep. I like that. Maybe even one around divorce. Like, it's an interesting concept is a lot of these card games are supposed to be played with other people, but I think there's also a market of a card game to play by yourself.
Yeah. Maybe kind of like some sort of, self-improvement card game somehow.
Yep. Like you just got out of a relationship or a divorce and it's like, okay, let's like work on you with some challenges and some like crazy activities, things like that.
Yeah. Like, oh, kind of, different ways that you could do something surprising or scary or challenge yourself each day.
Yep.
And again, there's points. Like, so, you could take the goal is, try to raise the number of points you get each week. And, over a 12-week period, you'll improve yourself somehow.
Yep. Oh, I love that. I think that could be really, really cool. So yeah, that's the card game. It's going really well. And then the First Years of Marriage newsletter is going pretty well too. I got it featured in Fox News, which whatever, but it's, got featured somewhere. And
Well, when you say Fox News, what do they do?
they interviewed me about Bill Gates's daughter's wedding. And they mentioned as in my title that I was bridesmaid for hire and first years of marriage. And they linked to the newsletter, which drove, you know, I think like 100, 150 signups.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah, it's really great.
And then another thing I did that worked really well was I did an article interviewing divorce lawyers. So like 5 reasons people get divorced the first year of marriage. And I featured,
yeah, I saw that.
And then I linked divorce lawyers and then they shared it with their network and that drove a lot of signups. So that's my new thing.
Yeah, you should do that every single time.
Yep. Yep. I did it again this week and then it drives those people to share it with their audience. So that's like my free way of getting new subscribers.
And how many subscribers now do you have on First Years of Marriage?
We're still under 1,000. So 800.
800? Oh, okay. That's great. So, all right. And then, but like how many did you gain this past month?
I think I gained around like 150.
So you gained like 14% or no more than that, a little more than that. So that's great.
It's definitely moving slower than Odd Jobs. It's definitely moving slower, but I think I can still do some work to advertise it in places that the audience is. So reaching out to these experts.
The market for Odd Jobs is like 200 million people and the market for people who just got married is much smaller. It's still a huge market, but it's smaller.
Yeah.
But that's okay. So, and is that one, have you been monetizing that one at all?
No.
Okay. Still focusing on the content, but it's good. Like trying different things, like the divorce lawyer thing. You saw this was a good source of, getting new subscribers. This is the most new subscribers you got in a month since the first month.
Yeah, it is. And I also made a TikTok and an Instagram reel. I made like one of them and that drove a good amount of people too. So I can start making more and more and more of those. So that's something I'm going to start doing.
Yeah, that's great. You know, you should do you and Adam argue a lot?
Of course.
You should do a podcast. Like whenever you start arguing about something, start recording it and release that on your newsletter.
Mm.
People will definitely share that.
Yeah, I love that. Gotta just get him to agree.
Yeah. Like if you're really about to get into it, like you don't want to go to his parents' house for Thanksgiving and she's always asking about what you're going to cook or she doesn't want you to cook. Why not? It's all sorts of things people could argue about on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. That's why this week's was popular because it's like how to dodge the questions you get asked as a newlywed on Thanksgiving. So when everyone's asking you when you're having a kid or when you're doing all this, I had all these experts break down how to handle that. And that one got a high open rate because I think that's like obviously very relevant to right now.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period. And I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs. And I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away. And I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb. But there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours. And they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
What percentage of people do you think want to have a kid when they get married?
It's so hard to tell. I think it's so location-based because like my people I know in New York who are in their 30s and just got married, they're not looking to have a kid. But I'm in Florida right now where all my friends who got married had a kid within the first year and a half. So wow. I think it's so location-based and community-based, but I would say like maybe more than, maybe like a little bit over 50% want to have a kid the first or second year.
Yeah. That's a lot.
But that's also when a lot of the marriages fail. So.
Yeah, because who knows? Like maybe the marriage, like you never know. Well, why should the marriage be like such a big change happens when you have a kid? You have to make sure your relationship can handle that.
But a lot of people have, like, not a lot of people, but people also try to have a kid the first year or two because they have nothing really else to look forward to. And they think that's what to do next, even though the relationship is not very good. People are so brainwashed to think marriage, kid, next, next, next. But that's not really what they want.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely did not want to have a kid when I got married. And what we did was we agreed to wait a year, and like a year and one day later, my wife was pregnant, and I'm infinitely grateful that we have a kid.
Yeah.
So, it worked out, but I really did not want to have a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least I thought I didn't.
But people feel the pressure. I can't tell you how many people ask me, when we're having a kid, or they look at me and they're like, are you pregnant? You know? And it's like, it's just,
now, do you take that as an insult? They look at you and say, are you pregnant?
Beyond an insult, I'm thinking to myself, I have to start, you know, wearing bigger pants or something. I mean, it's just, it's so insulting, because it's like, why is that the next step you think everyone has to take? And also, people ask me more about that than anything I'm working on. I guarantee you, if I posted I'm pregnant on Facebook, more people would care about that than my Odd Jobs newsletter, you know?
Yeah, and it's definitely different for men and women. Like, no one ever asked me
if I was
pregnant. So
Yep. Everybody asks me, and everyone finds their weird way of asking it. Some people are very direct, and then some people say it in this like very, you know, unusual way. But maybe that's a post, but yeah, how people ask you if you're gonna have kids. It's just bizarre. It's bizarre.
So let's talk about Odd Jobs. How's that one doing?
So that's, you know, it's good. I hit over 1,000. I'm at 1,200 subscribers.
Oh, that's amazing. How many subscribers this past month?
I think over 200. It a lot. We were, last time we talked, I think I was at 900 something. So over 250 in the last month.
That is amazing. So what do you think is clicking in? Like, that's a huge percentage. It's like a 25% gain in 1 month. If you move up 25% every month, that means you'll double every 3 months. So like this time next year, if you do 25% a month, you'll be 2,500 in March, 5,000 in June, 10,000 at the end of September, and 20,000 at the end of the year.
Wow. Yeah. You know, I think like a lot of things clicked into place. Number one, it was mentioned in CNBC and Business Insider. So I think having it linked there, people clicked over and subscribed. I did a cross promotion for free with another woman's newsletter that brought a lot of subscribers. I was featured on a podcast that's about careers, a TikTok video. So a lot of different things snapped into place. Also, I think it's a time of the year where people either want to make more money or want to quit their job. So I'm getting some people who are signing up because they're just like, I need to make some quick money, or I just hate my job.
Yeah. And probably both. So that's good. And let me ask you, do you think your newsletter is helping them?
Yes, because I think what I do is I give them practical advice, but I also give them open opportunities to apply for every Friday. And I think people really like that, because I do the heavy lifting for you. So if the theme of the week is jobs around pets on Friday, I'm going to give you 20 jobs that are open right now to apply to if you love pets or whatever it is. And then on Monday, I'm giving people practical ways of getting into those jobs or starting those jobs. So I did one about how to make $10,000 over the holiday season. And I broke down a bunch of ideas, and I tried to help them exactly with how to market it, how to start it, what to do. So I think it's helping them. Of course, it could help more, but I like this better than like interviewing like the professional mermaid once a week. This newsletter is way more actionable.
Yeah. Like if someone, like you remember you did the one on surveys.
Yep.
So if someone wanted to do online surveys for a couple thousand a month, do you have the links to actually show them how to do it?
Absolutely. It's the links of exactly where to go, exactly how much you're going to get paid per survey, and how long it's going to take you, and available opportunities. So yeah, I think like it is actionable. But then there's some like for the seasonal jobs, I was like, a great way of making money right now is to become a professional gift buyer. So sitting down with the person and picking out all the gifts for their family and friends, you could make $1,000 a person doing that.
Oh yeah, I saw that one, and I was wondering, how does someone get started at that?
So that I would market more locally than trying to go online. I would literally in your local community print a sheet of paper, a flyer with your information, or post it on all of your social media. Tell 10 friends to tell 10 other people, because that's something, because it is so last minute, you're going to want to attract your network. It's pointless to start a website right now. It's pointless to sort of run ads for that. But I think that if you put that service out there, whether with ground marketing in person or with your local area, I think you can be super successful. People are so stressed right now about gifts. And if you're somebody who's like, oh, I can go research all of the gifts for you, give you all the links of where to buy them, that's a valuable service.
And did you say in the newsletter, I forget, how to get started doing it?
I think so. I think for that one, I gave examples of people who do it. And then I said, you know, here's how you could market it. So I think I did do that in that one. But I could always do more of that. I could definitely do a better job.
So between Odd Jobs and First Years of Marriage, you have over 2,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
So this is amazing. So this is great. And then with Odd Jobs, again, I think that one, the more specific you are about how people can do this now and basically start making money yesterday, I think the more traffic it's going to get. And are you asking, like, are you answering questions on Quora and stuff like that?
I need to do more of that. I've been putting it on LinkedIn and that's been
okay.
good. But I can
LinkedIn's
do,
good.
Yeah, I can do more Quora. You know, it's made me think that it's not just Odd Jobs. Like, I can't figure out what this newsletter is actually about, but it's not like meet the weirdo person doing the weird
right.
job. It's like, it's something else. It's more like you want to make extra money or you want to do a career change. Like, here is like maybe things you didn't even think about. So it's becoming to me more than just Odd Jobs.
Yeah, no, and I think that's really great. So it's kind of more like side hustles, or it's more like, you know, work from home type of jobs.
Yeah, the number
side hustle is not even like that great a word for it. Yeah, it's more like work from home.
When I look at my Google Analytics, like the biggest search terms are work from home jobs or side hustles from home. So all of that has been like what people are finding this from.
Yeah. That's good. So that's good to look at that stuff, because then you might want to think of like just testing out, like, have you tried like some basic ads, something like that?
Yeah.
Have we talked about Facebook ads?
So I tried Google ads and LinkedIn ads. Google ads work really well. LinkedIn ads did not work really well. And I haven't done Facebook, but I could do Facebook. I was going to wait till after the holidays.
And also now, I guess with this insight we have about Pinterest, maybe does Pinterest allow ads? I don't know.
Yes, they do. Yep.
Okay. So that's good. So, okay, it sounds like these newsletters, are you enjoying them? Are you enjoying doing them?
I love them. I'm having so much fun with them, especially because they're so different. I write 4 newsletters a week. I write Odd Jobs, First Years of Marriage, My Monday, and My Bridesmaid for Hire one. So I'm writing 4 a week, but I really like all of them, and all of them have a different audience. So...
And I'm surprised, like the Odd Jobs one, do you think do you think that people are going from one of your newsletters to the Odd Jobs one? Because I would think if you advertise the Odd Jobs one in your Bridesmaid for Hire one,
yeah,
people will go.
I think they do. I think I get some traffic from my Monday newsletter. Well, here's what I was going to ask you. Like, I write 4 of these newsletters. I wish there was like a way I can just say, subscribe to all things Jen Glanz, and then you get a Monday update with like... these 4 newsletters or something, because I'm sure I have crossover traffic, but altogether with all my lists, I have, you know, close to 50,000 subscribers total. I wish I could just do something together.
Yeah. Substack doesn't offer that option.
Not in a nice way.
I wonder if there is a way to do it, or you know what, at the very least, do it manually. So you see the request and then sign everybody up manually.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I want to do, like a subscribe to all things Jen.
Yeah, like if they hit the button, then you send back an immediate email. Signing, this person's subscribing to everything. And then starting on your next newsletters, they'll find that they get all 4. They don't have to know that it was done manually.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was even thinking of like if they subscribe to all 4, they get 1 email rather than getting 4 for me a day that have all 4 inside of it or something like that. But yeah, I think... because there's definitely crossover. And if I already have 50,000 total, there should be some way to combine it.
Yeah. No, that's a good idea. And then Odd Jobs is the one. Rather than talk about that newsletter specifically, I just want to mention about Trademark. We had some discussion around various newsletters and products that you could do, or that you could potentially do, where there might be companies in other industries that use a similar name.
Yeah.
And so, for instance, when Apple Computer started by Steve Jobs in the 70s, he had an issue because there was a record label called Apple Records, and it was the record label owned by a little band called the Beatles. And so they actually had a discussion, and Apple Computer said, well, look, we're in the computer business, you're in the music business. So by law, if you're in a different industry, you can use the same name. So they're used to, so obviously HBO, for instance, is a TV company. There used to be an HBO that was a medical supplies company, and they had a different logo. Okay, that's a trademark. That's a little different. But it's a, I don't know, it's a, whatever you do with a graphic that makes it your graphic.
Yeah.
But when you're in a different industry, but the problem that Apple Computer had is when they became just Apple and they started selling music on the phone, they had an issue. And Apple Records, Paul McCartney, was upset because Steve Jobs was breaking the deal. So that's why it actually took a while before the Beatles' music was on Apple, because they were still working out their deal and they had to settle it. But here's the thing. Some people might also say that, so if you're in two different industries, there's no, you can't infringe on a person's trademark or whatever. The other thing is if you have a commonly used word. So if I made apples and called myself the Apple Company, I can't fight for my, if somebody else calls themselves the Apple Company, well, we sell apples, and apples is a common word in the dictionary that means a fruit. Okay, the reason Apple Computer could get it, or when Apple Computer was first created, it was called Apple Computer. The reason they got away with it is because apples, if you look in the dictionary, has nothing to do with computers. So, and the reason the Beatles could do Apple Records is because in the dictionary, apples have nothing to do with music. So for commonly used words or expressions or phrases, unless your phrase means something completely different than what's in the dictionary, so the phrase is being just used to describe what you do, then it can't be trademarked. A common phrase can't be trademarked. Like if I called my company, we do weddings, and someone else says we do weddings, Inc., then yeah, we do weddings because it's not like we make computers. We're marrying people. So it's totally different. It's different than a company like Pinterest. Okay. Or what's a commonly used word? Snapchat, the company is called Snap, I think. So, but they're not talking about snapping your fingers, so they're allowed to use that word for their company, and they're allowed to trademark it. So these are important things in the law. And people should know this when they're starting companies, if they're worried about a trademark, that if it's just a common phrase that's in the dictionary, no worries. If you're in a different industry than other companies, no worries. Or if you use a word in a dictionary, but you use a common word, but it's specifically used to distinguish your company, then you're not invading any trademark.
So is it worth trademarking words that are so common, even though, like, so then why do people file trademarks for words that are so common if they're not going to get approved in that sense? So like,
because in America, anybody can sue for anything, and people get afraid of lawsuits. So people will unethically do that in order to threaten people with lawsuits when it's just bullshit. Like it's not, there's no issue at all.
I know I've been down many roads of being threatened and all of this, and I'm sure people listening have received cease and desist as well. What are you supposed to do, especially if you know that you're not in the wrong, but you are being threatened? Because, legal stuff costs people a lot of money. So if you're the small fish and someone bigger is coming after you, what do people do in these situations, especially when they're not in the wrong, but they're being threatened?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because you're right. So why should you even waste the time or money to deal with this when what can you do? But again, the reality is, unfortunately, people will threaten to sue and you have to do something. So for instance, if someone sends you a cease and desist, you have to respond or else they have a basis for going to court. Like they didn't respond to the cease and desist. Now, again, even if the case is stupid, as many cases are, people always have a right to sue or do something. Unfortunately, so here's the choices. You either get like a cheap lawyer who does a basic response and, is willing to help you out. Maybe someone wants to be your lawyer because they see that you're on to bigger and better things and this is a good introduction, so they won't charge. It doesn't take that many hours to cease and desist. Responding to a cease and desist is almost like a form letter. Yep. So, they don't have to charge you that much, maybe a couple hundred dollars, maybe $1,000 if the lawyer's aggressive. Or the other thing is you could just cave in. Most people, I would say, cave in. And there's nothing wrong with that either, because let these people play their games. You're trying to build a legitimate product, if you get in cease and desist and it's causing you stress to deal with this and you don't want to deal with the legal headache and you don't take your emotions into that, like, why are these people doing this?
Yeah.
Then it's fine to, you know, just agree to the cease and desist and change what you're doing, even though it's every part of your body tells you it's wrong, what they're doing. They're just doing this to harass you. The flip side is, in terms of like changing what you're doing, again, there's nothing wrong with that. So let's say, you know, let's say one of your newsletters got a cease and desist and you decide to change what you're doing. You just change the name. Your current subscribers won't even realize it. And your new subscribers never saw you with the old name anyway.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with doing that. You know, so really you could go either way. I don't know. Some part of me always wants to fight, but to be honest, I've actually almost never, in all the businesses I've ever started and all the different things I've ever done, I've never been sued. I've never gone to court. I've never dealt with a lawyer in almost any case. Like, yes, when you sell a company, I have had to hire a lawyer, but even incorporating, I just use like LegalZoom and, and you know, just do that. So I don't know. I'm torn. But if you decide to go another way and you're not, you know, in love with the name or you're willing to change the name of what you're doing, then no big deal.
On the flip side, do you think it's worth trademarking names that you come up with?
Yeah, but I've never done it. I really never deal with legal on anything. And the reason is because it's almost never worth it.
Yeah.
Like lawyers are expensive and I don't know, why deal with a lawyer when you don't have to?
Let's say someone made a podcast tomorrow called Skip the Line. They'd be allowed to do that. There's really nothing you could do, right? And inside the podcast was similar types of things that your book talks about. They could do
that.
By
the way, right. And legally, by the way, they can do that because skip the line refers to skipping a line.
Yep.
So it's a common phrase and it actually means that. So you can't trademark a generic phrase.
Yeah.
So legally they could do that. I have had cases where one person took an article of mine and completely put it on his blog as if he wrote it and signed it, you know, digitally with his name. And I didn't sue the person, but I found a friend of mine knew that person and, you know, I had him change it. But, you know, that was a case where I could have done something legal, but it was not even a big deal. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
So I guess my gut is change the name, even though you don't have to, even if you don't have to. Now, if you've already got like a million customers and you don't really want to rebrand, then don't do it. But if you have like hypothetically 5,000 subscribers to your newsletter, there's nothing wrong with changing the name because most of your subscribers are your future subscribers, not your current ones.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just such a fighter in the sense of like, I don't do anything wrong. I try to follow all the rules and then you get something like this. And it's just, you know, sometimes these things really piss you off and I think the average person gets so scared by these legal things because we don't know what they mean. And, you know, you get a legal notice and you think someone's going to knock on your door and serve you papers. And, you know, so I think these things for the average person like me is just terrifying.
Yeah, I agree. It is terrifying. I've never gotten sued about anything, but I get legal stuff all the time. And each time it's always a little scary. I get nervous opening the mail.
Yeah.
But it's just part of doing business. There are like bad people out there who will take advantage and, you know, why deal with them?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I agree. I think like, I just know a lot of people in business get these, this happens to everyone eventually.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of people probably listening who, if something like this happens to you, this is good advice to hear.
Well, one time, the only time I've ever been involved in anything potentially legal is one time I was on the board of a company where the company didn't do well. This is a very long time ago. The company didn't do well and the board was sued by investors. And every member of the board was subpoenaed except for me. And so the law firm, you know, we all had insurance for this sort of thing. So, and the company had a law firm handle all of us. And the law firm finally reached out to me and like, we want to meet with you. You're the only person who wasn't subpoenaed by the court. And after they met with me for like an hour or two. And by the way, there was the lawyer and there were three associates. So they were charging like an enormous amount of money to talk to me, who wasn't even subpoenaed by the court. Like there was no reason to actually talk to me. But they realized, they said, we realize you know zero about this company. And there's no way you could possibly have known anything that was going on. So that's why nobody you're in danger that of negligence, but no one has accused you of that. So you're fine.
That must have been a good feeling. And you must have been proud of yourself for that.
Yes, I was very proud. So, but other than that, I've never, you know, one time, actually StockPicker, this is a company I started in 2006 and seven. There was another company called StockTicker that raised the trademark issue. And we just said, we told them we're not going to do anything. And they just never contacted us again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the other thing is that when you respond, sometimes they say, okay, they didn't fall for our trick. And I'm not saying StockTicker didn't have a reasonable case. They weren't tricking, but like a lot of people are just doing a trick. Sometimes people say, oh, okay, they didn't fall for it. We don't want to go to court because court's expensive and we're probably going to lose anyway. So like if you did respond, it will go away. But it also might be an opportunity to just rethink the branding. And then it's up to you what you want to do. Either way, you're not going to, nothing bad is going to happen.
Have I lost sleep over this? Yes. Has it made me stress? Yes.
So this is one of those things where you can't lose sleep over it. Like you learn through experience that this is not worth losing sleep over.
Yeah. I think it's a good kick in the ass of just like, hey, Jen, this is what it's like to be someone who's creating things. And this is like getting better than getting an MBA is getting this real life experience of like, these are things that happen to you.
Right. And they don't talk about this in business school, by the way.
No.
Like, business school doesn't talk about any of the things you need to know to actually run a business.
Right.
Unfortunately.
And they should, you know. I mean, this is great. This is great real life experience for me.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So that's an opportunity to maybe, who knows, rebrand or something. I don't know. What else is going on?
Be My Billboard. I have about over 100.
Oh, yeah. Be My Billboard.
Yeah, 100 people on the site. And I sent an email today telling people to update their profiles because I'm going to send out my first package in December. I got another brand to sign on today.
Wow.
And I updated the landing page, but I need to spend more time and do a complete redo. But I just need it simple, sort of like what you said. but, you know, to me, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at the site. I would just, again, I hate scrolling.
Yeah.
So I would just tighten it up somehow and get all the information you need without as fast as possible. Be My Billboard, become a billboard. That's even also just not completely clear. Although it becomes clear as I scroll, I would get it more up top somehow. But all right, but it's fine. And are there any brands that you didn't know in advance?
Yeah, there's a brand that emailed me today that wants to be on there that I'd never heard of before, but that was sort of cool. And it's moving along. You know, I was thinking it's like there's all these influencer sites out there, but this is almost like the influencer site for the nobodies, for the anybodies, for just real people. And there's nothing, there's something really like that out there. And that's sort of cool to me, is like empowering like the nobodies. It doesn't matter if you have 100 subscribers or 1 million. It doesn't matter if you'd ever leave your house or you always leave your house. Like this is a platform where you could wear something and make money for that.
Yeah, no, I always love this idea. This is a great idea. So like what are some of the brands on there right now? By the way, because people are listening to this podcast, people have been sharing their own ideas of what you should do with this. So one question I had early on, which is how do you know if someone's really wearing your billboard? You should put let's say a brand is giving everybody t-shirts to wear. Like, you know, the Newlywed Card Game, you make a t-shirt and people are now a human billboard for the Newlywed Card Game and they're wearing the t-shirt. And you want to know, is this person really wearing the t-shirt? Are they doing what they're supposed to be doing? I'm giving away all this free stuff to this person. Put a QR code on the t-shirt.
I was just going to ask you if you can print QR codes on t-shirts.
Yes, you can.
That's it. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I like that even for, I don't know if it works virtually, but for over Zoom too, if there was a QR code right here that people could scan and take a picture of, you know, or I don't know, do QR codes like work if I have a picture of me with the QR code?
Yep, it does. Because yeah. it's only look for that one spot. Okay, but you have to, like, so let's say if you're wearing in front of a camera, it has to be a very clear camera because
yeah.
each black…
Yeah, box, if there's a photo of you yeah. holding up a phone with a QR code and they run their phone, their camera over that image of the QR code
yeah.
that's on your phone, that's on the t-shirt, that, you know, that's a picture of you, then it works.
Yeah. I'm going to, like, you can put it on a pocket right here and write, like, scan me, you know, like that could be really cool. Yeah. I like the QR code. But yeah, I think there's that. I think there's also, like, you know, people are wearing this virtually too, right? So if they're on a Zoom call, just taking a screenshot of how many people were on the Zoom call where they wore the shirt, or, you know, posting it on social media. I think there's many ways of tracking this.
Yeah, completely. So that's great. So what's the next step for Be My Billboard?
I want to continue to improve the site. I think it can use a big upgrade. It's working, but it's like… it can use a bit of a refresh. And I'm going to mail out in December. The next step is mailing out the first packages of items to people and getting them to post about it, getting brands to review them. So it's actually for the first time getting people to really be billboards.
Yeah, that's great. I'm excited. And Jay, do we have the James Altucher Show podcast on there yet?
Not yet.
Okay, we got to do that. And then we have t-shirts. And then I want to be a human billboard, so I'm going to sign up.
Yes, I want all the James Altucher stuff, and then I'm going to send you both packages with QR codes on them.
Oh yeah, and I'm starting at least a company or two in the next, hopefully next few weeks. So
amazing.
Yeah, so we'll have to put those on there. And so, what are you doing to advertise that one again?
I really haven't done very much, honestly, but it's advertising.
Oh, yeah, because you're launching.
Yeah, it's advertising other newsletters of mine and on my website. So I haven't really done much, but yeah, there's a huge pickup when it was mentioned on the podcast. A lot of people from the podcast.
And this podcast or other podcasts?
This podcast.
And you should get on, this is one you could, is great to get on like CNBC and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe do deals with like ad agencies. If you know any like small ad agencies or even big ones, if you have any contacts in the ad agency business, like this is one of those things where you just think of like everybody you know,
yep.
or every company you know. Like you go to conferences and stuff like that with entrepreneurs, like just everybody you know, even if they have a small business.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. And then I had some new ideas that I was thinking of that I don't know if they're worth pursuing, but one of them is like, I'm obsessed with the NFT space and I was thinking of NFTs for weddings. My slogan is, your wedding isn't official until it's on the blockchain.
Oh my God, this is a great idea. Whatever the idea is. So here's the thing. Think of NFTs, don't think of it as art. I like to think of NFTs as tickets. So NFTs in some way provide access to something, whether it's a piece of art or whether it's a phone call with somebody or whatever. So describe your idea. Like in what way is this, you know, not just like a random thing that you're calling an NFT, but actually used as a blockchain, yeah. you know, specific idea?
There's so many ways. I think it's very early, but here's what I'm thinking. Way number one is it's a wedding gift. So you can gift an NFT of the couple, right? So that's art. But number two is like, what if your whole wedding was on the blockchain? What if that's how you sent out invitations and people got invited? Like, you know, through these exclusive NFTs, like what if in the metaverse coming up, like you also had a wedding in the metaverse? Like,
yeah.
I want to do this before anyone else does this. And I think there's so much potential for NFTs for weddings. I don't think my audience is there yet, but I think like maybe the male audience, there's like a lot of males that might be into this, like wedding
gifts.
Oh my
God, you should start a religion in the metaverse and get yourself, you know, classified as a minister so you can actually give, perform weddings in the, officiate in the metaverse. And of course, in real life, it could… you know, so the NFT would maybe provide access to the metaverse version of the wedding and the wedding itself. It's the ticket to the wedding itself. So potentially someone could sell their ticket to your wedding, but yeah. you know, if it's an NFT, but that's kind of interesting as well.
Right. But also like, you know, eventually wedding registries are going to be using cryptocurrency or maybe NFTs. Like, there's a $1 billion idea here with wedding registries and NFTs or crypto. There's a $1 billion idea with weddings, NFT and crypto. I don't really know what that is yet, but there's something.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, how big is the wedding industry?
I mean, it's like a $17 billion industry.
Okay, so let's think right now. So what? So an NFT in the wedding space. What could it give you access to? Again, thinking in terms of access, because people obviously want to go to the wedding. Maybe, mm-hmm. maybe they want to go to the metaverse wedding. But what's something that's really useful that they could want?
What about the a picture with the brides and grooms?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like a VIP picture.
Yeah,
you know, like oh, it can be in the family, mm-hmm. you know, wherever.
Yeah, and also by the way, this could be kind of like a Kickstarter for weddings. Like, hey, buy the NFT of our wedding, you get this, this, and this, and it helps us defray the cost of the wedding.
Yeah, and it's also like it could be something with honeymoons too, where if you buy the NFT, you get access to like this honeymoon package or whatever it is. I mean.
Yeah, like maybe the couple can negotiate a discount with wherever they're having yeah. their honeymoon and say, hey, we're selling an NFT about our honeymoon. Can you offer a discount in the future to anyone who has this NFT?
Well, I think the cool thing is whatever the NFT gives you after you're married, you're probably incentivized to then sell it to somebody else who's getting married. So like, I think there is a huge lifespan of these NFTs for weddings.
Yeah. I love this idea. I'm going to think of some more ideas. Or if any listeners out there wants to give Jen an NFT idea for the wedding business, please get in touch with us or send me a message on Twitter. I'm at Jay Altucher. Jen, I forget, what's your Twitter?
@JenGlanz.
At Jen Glantz, send to her. Don't send to Jay. He just forgets.
I was about to give a very bad NFT idea. It's like
What?
So the NFT would be the tickets to the honeymoon with the couple.
Oh my God. That would be too much.
Like, but you get the chairs. Like 2 days only, 1 day only, a week, you know?
Oh man. I mean...
You know what the NFT could actually do too is you could set up a prediction market where people could bet how long the NFT allows you to bet how long this marriage is going to last.
how long before the annoying questions comes up? You know?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, this is my assignment is I'm going to do a lot of research and come up with 10 ideas for the NFTs in the wedding space because I think this is like an enormous, enormous idea that's very early for my personal audience, you know?
Yeah, no, I love this idea. So, and again, there's never too many things going on. Like yeah. that's a great idea to pursue. It would be a shame not to pursue it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, I mean, look, it sounds like everything's going in a good direction. And the main thing is I think, be careful of the things you stress about. Think about it from the point of view, like compare an experience, like someone who's been in business for 20 years versus someone who's been in business, let's say 2 years. So what's the main difference? Now, the person who's been in business for 20 years probably knows sales a little better, probably knows how to execute a little better, probably does everything a little better. But the main thing that they do better is they know what to think about. They know what to spend time thinking about and what not to waste time thinking about. And I think a lot of these stresses, someone who's been in business for a long time would not think too much about these things.
Yeah.
You would think about it to the extent of, is this real or not? And okay, I don't want to deal with this. I'm going to change the name. The business has barely even got off the ground, so it's no big deal. Or this is bullshit. I'm going to pay a lawyer $500. They're going to respond. I'm never going to hear from these guys again. And at the very least, I'll have a story about what happened when these guys tried to do this to me.
Yeah.
So, so either way, but they wouldn't think too much about it. They wouldn't lose sleep over it.
No, you're right. I think it's teaching me how to also like prepare for these situations, like even setting aside money for like problems in 2022 or like having a team of people like lawyers I can instantly call when things happen so that I don't have to stress about all of this. So I think it's teaching me what I need to add in my life to handle random things that happen.
Yeah, but like, for instance, you had this issue. I wrote to my lawyer who always responds to me or normally responds to me very quickly. He didn't respond at all. So, and which A, shows you to the extent to which I use lawyers and B, and he's a very good lawyer. I'm a little bit surprised he didn't respond, but not completely because he probably just figured it was a non-issue because I described to him what I thought of the solution. He probably just agreed with that, but didn't respond. I don't know. I'll talk to him at some point and ask him. But so this all sounds great, Jen, and I can't wait till the newlywed card game or whatever you decide to call it comes out. I really like the design with the newlywed card game, but I agree. Now that I think about it, maybe you could have an edgier name.
Yeah. No.
By the way, maybe you could test both names. So make three designs of three different, of three card games with three different titles, put $20 each behind Facebook ads, and the ads will click to nothing, but see, but you'll see all the analytics and see which design or which title attract the most clicks.
Okay, that's a cool experiment. I'm going to try that.
And then that's your name.
Yeah, I'm going to do that with all the names I'm going to change to see what people click
yeah.
on. Cool.
All right, and then let's talk maybe the week after next.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.